It is a joy to be with you again tonight. Thank you so much for joining us in worship to God and our study of His Word, especially if you happen to be visiting with us. The story of Ruth is just to me such a compelling and powerful narrative and account of the greatness of our God. And perhaps when I just say the story of Ruth, we think, well, or you may think, I know that story very well. And one of the beautiful and powerful things about God's Word is no matter how familiar we may be, there's always more to find in the most well-known account. In the text of Scripture we've read so many times, or it may be this is the first time. And so it's exhilarating and encouraging from that standpoint. But when we think about the story of Ruth, one writer has described the story of Ruth as a diamond in the darkness of a time of departure from God. And I think that's a very accurate description. Oftentimes I think we kind of read the book of Judges in one category, and then there's that story about Ruth. What's interesting is to appreciate how wonderful the story is, we have to appreciate the background. And when we go back to the book of Judges, coming right out of Joshua, it seems like in Joshua there's so much hope and promise and all of that sort of thing. And God had made that promise that through His grace and through His power, He would be with God's people if they did not turn to the right or to the left, if they continued in His Word. And then we come to Judges, and I have to tell you, if Judges was a movie, it wouldn't be PG, I'll tell you that. I mean, it is graphic. Why is it so graphic? Because this is what the darkness of sin looks like. If I don't understand anything else about Judges, I need to understand that. And that is, when we depart from God, there's not light at the end of that tunnel. It's dark and it's broken. And so, for instance, when we come to Judges chapter 2, early on, here we had this great generation of those who did trust God's promises. Look at there at verse 7, the people served the Lord all the days of Joshua and all the days of the elders who survived Joshua, who had seen all the great work of the Lord which He had done for Israel. Doesn't that just sound wonderful? But then Joshua, the son of Nun, the servant of the Lord, died at the age of 110. And verse 10 makes the statement, all that generation also were gathered to their fathers, and there arose another generation after them who did not know the Lord, nor yet the work which He had done for Israel. Many times it's been pointed out, we're only one generation away from apostasy. And so that can happen. And it does happen here among God's people to such a point, without going into all those graphic details that you might notice in your study of Judges, come to Judges chapter 21 and verse 25. Last verse in this book. This is what happens when God is removed as the standard for our lives, when it's all about what we decide or what we are comfortable with or what our society, which has abandoned the notion of morality, objective morality, pursuit of truth. Notice verse 25, in those days there was no king in Israel and everyone did what was right in his own eyes. And so that's not a very pretty picture, is it? And yet, with all of that going on, out of this time of spiritual anarchy and rebellion against God, we have this great story of Ruth. We have a great story of devotion and sacrifice and loyalty and faithfulness. So here you have this time when, to the extreme, we think of the faithlessness of God's people, and yet we have Ruth. You know, God has made a promise to His people. And the Hebrew writer even references this. He has told us He will not abandon us. Now, he won't fellowship sin, but he'll be true to his promises. In fact, in Hebrews 13:5, for he himself has said, I will never leave you, nor will I ever forsake you. And so I want us, as we look at the concept in the book of Ruth and what the story is really about, let's begin with the story within the story. Somebody says, well, Bruce, I know this story. I know all the major players in this story. Obviously, there's Ruth, and there was Naomi, and there's Boaz, and it's just the most wonderful love story that you're ever going to read about. I know this story. It is a love story. And all of those individuals that I just mentioned to you and that we're all so familiar with are important and necessary to this story. But I want you to understand, and I want us to understand, while they are all important, they are not the primary actor in this story. And you're going to say, Bruce, you should have taken a longer nap than you did this afternoon. What are you talking about? Because in my Bible, it says the book of Ruth. And you're right, it says the book of Ruth. But the primary actor in this story is God. And that's what this story is about. It's about the faithfulness of God to his people. And if I don't get that from this story, I'm not getting the story. Not in its fullness, not in what God intended. It is a story about God's gracious faithfulness. Now there is a very romantic level of this when we think about Boaz, and we're going to talk about that. Boaz and his love for Ruth and all of that. But let's go a little deeper behind that. It is a story about God's love for us. It's a story about God's love in the Old Testament for Israel, his steadfast love. You say, well, wait a minute. How exactly am I to see this? It's a glorious example of God using people for his purposes. We think about God's faithfulness to Naomi through the instrumentality of Ruth. I want to really develop that idea because I think we see it in the context. He is the primary actor of grace and mercy, even in a time of deep despair, even when someone might raise their hands and say, how could there be hope when I read Judges? And yet there was. Even then, there is this bright light of God's mercy. Even then. If only his people would pursue it. So we're going to read quite a bit because I don't think there's any substitute for what the scripture says. And I'm going to read quite a bit from Ruth. And we're going to talk through this story. And then we're going to make some, I think, very important applications for our lives. So when we think about this story, and of course, it starts out with just despair. And so we have this account of the, when you look at the story of the book of Ruth, tragedy strikes right away. I mean, you're almost not quite ready for it. It puts you in shock right away. So let's look here in Ruth chapter 1. It came about in the days when the judges governed that there was a famine in the land. And a certain man of Bethlehem in Judah went to sojourn in the land of Moab with his wife and his two sons. So here you have them in another land, in a foreign land. And the name of the man was Elimelech, and the name of his wife Naomi, and the names of the two sons were Mahlon and Chilion, Ephrathites of Bethlehem in Judah. Now they entered the land of Moab and remained there. Then Elimelech, Naomi's husband, died, and she was left with her two sons. And they took for themselves Moabite women as wives. And the name of the one was Orpah. That's not Oprah, by the way. That's Orpah. And the name of the other, Ruth. And they lived there about 10 years. Then both Mahlon and Chilion also died. And the woman was bereft of her two children and her husband. Let's talk through this just a little bit. When we talk about tragedy, this is tragedy. Now, it would be tragic probably in just about any culture of any time, but especially this one. Here they are off as children of God in a foreign land. And if a woman didn't have a husband to provide and care for her, she could be in a lot of trouble. You know, there's a reason the prophets encouraged God's people to care for the widows. And the orphans, they're vulnerable. They're jeopardized. And so at the very beginning, that's what we have. Well, her husband dies. But then later on, even her sons die. So she has these two daughters-in-law and herself, and she finds out that she can go back home. But what is she supposed to do with these daughters-in-law? And so you'll notice there, it sets the very background very quickly of how tragic this is. And then in verse 6, then she arose with her daughters-in-law that she might return from the land of Moab, for she had heard in the land of Moab that the Lord had visited his people and giving them food. And so the circumstances are much better. Verse 7, so she departed from that place where she was, and her two daughters-in-law with her, and they went on the way to return to the land of Judah. And Naomi said to her two daughters-in-law, go return each of you to her mother's house. May the Lord deal kindly with you as you have dealt with the dead and with me. May the Lord grant that you may find rest each in the house of her husband. Then she kissed them, and they lifted up their voices, and they wept. Let's stop right there for just a minute. What an emotional scene that is. They had come to love Naomi. And I think the strong implication here, and even some just outright direct statements, is they came to appreciate her faith in the true and the living God. And yet this goes back to what I was describing to you, how vulnerable they were. And so she says, you know, you need to go back to where you're from so you can find provision and you can find care as well. And she kissed them in verse 9. And just, you can almost imagine them crying out and mourning and weeping in the deep grief. These women had lost their husbands. And now their mother-in-law says, you know, I need to go this way and you're going to have to go that way. And I hope that, and notice how she says this, she says that the Lord deal kind of with you as you have with me. So there was this blessed relationship that they enjoyed. Verse 10, and they said to her, no, but we will surely return with you, notice, to your people. So initially, both of them said, we're staying with you. Now that says something very important about Naomi. I don't want to leave her. They love her, and even in this moment of difficulty, have great concern for her. But notice verse 11, but Naomi said, return, my daughters. Why should you go with me? Have I yet sons in my womb that they may be your husbands? Return, my daughters, go, for I am too old to have a husband. And if I said I have hope, if I should even have a husband tonight and also bear sons, would you therefore wait until they were grown? Would you therefore refrain from marrying? No, my daughters, for it is harder for me than for you. For the hand of the Lord has gone forth against me. Now this is really important. Notice what Naomi thinks is going on. Naomi says, you don't want to come with me. I'm old. I'm vulnerable. My only hope is to go back to my people. But the Lord's not on my side. Have you ever felt like that? She was in such deep grief. She is disoriented right now in her faith. And this is critical to this story. You know, there's times in our lives where we're going to be disoriented. Because you're disoriented because of grief or emotional despair does not mean you are somehow unfaithful to the Lord. The greatest men and women of God have had periods of great disorientation. It didn't mean they didn't love the Lord. They just couldn't get their mind wrapped around what's going on. When you lose a loved one, if a parent loses a child, or you lose a parent, or you lose a dear brother or sister in Christ, part of grief often is disorientation. David went through it. The prophets went through it. How often did the prophets cry out, how long, O Lord? Did that mean they didn't trust the Lord? No, they trusted the Lord. Now they would come back around and come to that deep conviction that God would still be with them. If you read the psalmist, you see this over and over and over. I begin with that initial understanding of God, and I go through great difficulty, or the psalmist would go through great difficulty, and would be disoriented and feel like they were, you know, not able to get their bearings, if you will. And then they come back around and their faith is richer and stronger and better than it ever was before. And right now, Naomi, as much as she wants to love the Lord and serve the Lord, she just feels like He's against her. His hand has been against her. I mean, can you blame her? She's lost her husband. She's lost her sons. And so she kisses them and they weep. Orpah lifts up her voice and weeps. But Ruth, look at verse 14. And they lifted up their voices and wept again. And Orpah kissed her mother-in-law, but Ruth clung to her. She's not letting go. They both loved her, but she won't let go. Verse 15, then she said, behold, your sister-in-law has gone back to her people and her gods. Return after her, after your sister-in-law. But Ruth said, do not urge me to leave you or turn back from following you. For where you go, I will go, and where you lodge, I will lodge. Your people shall be my people, and your God, my God. Where you die, I will die, and there I will be buried. Thus may the Lord do to me worse. Anything but death parts you and me. And when she saw that she was determined to go with her, she said no more to her. I mean, this is a waste of time to keep talking about Ruth going back. She says, I'm going to be with you. You might notice a few things here. She knows she's going back to her people, and as an outsider, she's going to enter that community in whatever way she can. And not only that, when I look at, boy, isn't that a great verse to read at a wedding? How many weddings? I've read the verse at a wedding, but you know, and while it certainly can apply to the marriage relationship, it's interesting. Here it's talking about a mother-in-law and daughter-in-law, and I actually think it's also talking about God being faithful to His people. And so we have this beautiful text, this wonderful text. There's a sense in which God is working through Ruth, but it hasn't dawned on Naomi yet. Remember what Naomi said. Naomi said that she felt like the Lord's hand was against her. And yet here's Ruth. And I don't know at this point that she fully recognized it all, if at all, that God is working through Ruth. You mean God can work through a Moabitess? You mean God is working to bless Israel in the representation of Naomi through those who are outside of Israel? Yes. And so here is this wonderful example of faithful love and devotion of Ruth to Naomi. And what an impression Naomi must have made on Ruth in living her life for God, because she knew if she was going to follow her. I mean, if she's really going to follow her, it's not just about geography. It's about God's people. It's about being part of a community, by the way. And it's about following God. She knew that. And she wanted that. And so as God's chosen nation, Israel was to be God's servant as a light to other nations. But we all already have talked about Judges. They're not fulfilling their role as they should. In this story, which is set in such a time of dark and terrible unfaithfulness to God, we see that Ruth becomes a member of the community of God largely because of the examples of people like Naomi. Naomi was a righteous woman. And at the end of chapter 1, if you look at verses 20 and 21, you remember she said, she talks about her name and she says, don't call me pleasantness, call me bitterness. She's hurting. She's hurting. But then we come to chapter 2. So tragedy strikes in chapter 1 and we come to chapter 2, but life is sustained. So you begin to see, you know, the door, the window open up where there's hope. And so we come to chapter 2 of Ruth. And let's notice some of this text. Verse 1, now Naomi had a kinsman of her husband, a man of great wealth of the family of Elimelech, whose name was Boaz. You want to talk about providence. This is providence. So here they come. And of course, if you go back and you look at the Levirate law and all of that, that helps you understand what's going on in Ruth. Verse 2. And Ruth the Moabitess said to Naomi, please let me go to the field and glean among the ears of grain after one in whose sight I may find favor. And she said to her, go, my daughter. And if you go back and read Leviticus chapter 19 in verses 9 and 10, it's going to give a background to what we're about to read. In verse 3, so she departed and went and gleaned in the field after the reapers. And she happened to come to the portion of the field belonging to Boaz, who was of the family of Elimelech. Now behold, Boaz came from Bethlehem and said to the reapers, may the Lord be with you. And they said to him, may the Lord bless you. And then Boaz said to his servant who was in charge of the reapers, whose young woman is this? And the servant in charge of the reapers replied, she is the young Moabite woman who returned with Naomi from the land of Moab. Now we just read that, and you know, we may not pick up on that, but if you're Boaz, and you hear, he noticed her, and he asks who she is. They don't say, well, she's of Israel. She's a Moabitess. But look what this Moabitess did. She came back. She returned with Naomi. She cared. Now, I'm going to tell you something. You want to talk about character and integrity and loyalty and devotion. That had to be something that he picked up on. And in verse 7, and she said, Please let me glean and gather after the reapers among the sheaves. And then she came and has remained from the morning until now, and she has been sitting in the house for a little while. And Boaz says to Ruth, listen carefully, my daughter. Do not go out to glean in another field. Furthermore, do not go on from this one, but stay here with my maids. You see his grace? You see his tenderness? His provision? And of course, if we were going to look at foreshadows, you have God working through the instrumentality of Ruth. And we can talk about Christ as our kinsman redeemer. Keep reading with me. Then she fell on her face. Look at Ruth's humility before him. She fell on her face, bowing to the ground and said to him, why have I found favor in your sight that you have taken notice of me since I am a foreigner? She knows who she is. She knows that this is an extraordinary thing that has happened. So here's Boaz. He thinks it's extraordinary that she's done what she's done. And she's looking at Boaz and she's seeing the grace and the kindness and the provision. And that seems extraordinary to her. Verse 11, Boaz replied to her, all that you have done for your mother-in-law after the death of your husband, thus has been fully reported to me, and how you left your father and your mother and the land of your birth and came to a people that you did not previously know. He says, may the Lord reward your work and your wages be full from the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to seek refuge. I tell you what, if you like to highlight verses, that's a good one to highlight. So he says, what I'm seeing here is your character and your integrity and the providence of God. This story that begins with such tragedy, and now we're seeing that this is about God. This is about the Lord's faithfulness. He said, the Lord is caring for you. May the Lord reward your work. May your wages be full. Listen, the God of Israel, this gives us a real insight into the point in this story. That the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to seek refuge. The psalmist speaks of walking and living in the shadow of God's wings, of His provision, His blessing. In verse 13, then she said, I have found favor in your sight, my Lord, for you have comforted me and indeed have spoken kindly to your maidservant, though I am not like one of your maidservants. And so we see these provisions of the Lord that are being provided for her and Naomi through Boaz. Do you see how God can work in so many different ways? I mean, He's blessed Ruth through Naomi. He's blessing Naomi through Ruth. he's blessing Ruth and Naomi through Boaz. And so here she is working in this field in this wonderful conversation. I want to say something else to you. When you look at Boaz, faithfulness doesn't do the bare minimum. He says, I'm going to provide this, and not only this, I'm going to provide that, and not only am I going to provide that, I don't want you even to have to go to another field. And I want you to come with my servants. And he's going to go even further. And some of us say, well, you know, as long as I've got those boxes, I can check, yes, check, yes, check, yes. What's the bare minimum I can do and still go to heaven? Now, we all sin and we all fall short of the glory of God. But if in my heart, if in my mind, my thinking is, to the Lord who died for me and has provided for me, I'm going to do the bare minimum, that's not faithfulness. We may have a lot of areas to grow in. But you know, I've noticed through the years that the new convert who's passionate for the Lord, on fire for the Lord, they don't think that way. The new Christian who's really been converted, they're not thinking, you know, what's the least I could do? It takes a little while to grow that cold. Because the new convert wants to grow, wants to read, wants to study, wants to be with God's people. And there are a lot of folks who allow that to die, but you don't have to. We've all known people, been Christians for a long time, and they have such a powerful example of influence in our lives. Don't wax cold, as the old King James. And look at the faithfulness of Boaz, who appreciated her for all the right reasons, her humility and her faith and her love and her loyalty. And then, in chapter 2, verse 14, at mealtime, Boaz said to her, come here that you may eat of the bread and dip your piece of bread in the vinegar. So she sat beside the reapers, and he served her roasted grain, and she ate and was satisfied and had some left. And when she rose to glean, Boaz commanded his servants, saying, let her glean even among the sheaves, and do not insult her. Also, you shall purposely pull out for some grain from the bundles and leave it that she may glean, and do not rebuke her. So she gleaned in the field unto evening, and then she beat out what she had gleaned, and it was about an ephah of barley. And she took it up and went into the city, and her mother-in-law saw what she had gleaned. And she also took it out and gave Naomi what she had left after she was satisfied. And her mother-in-law then said to her, where did you glean today, and where did you work? May he who took notice of you be blessed. So she told her mother-in-law with whom she had worked and said, the name of the man with whom I work today is Boaz. Listen, Naomi's tune changes quite a bit. Look at verse 20. Now she's starting to see hope. Now she's starting to see the Lord. In verse 20, Naomi said to her daughter-in-law, may he be blessed of whom? You remember the Lord's turned his hand against him? May he be blessed of the Lord who has not withdrawn his kindness to the living and to the dead. And so here's Naomi now, instead of saying the Lord has turned his hand against me, which I can understand why she would have said that initially, now she's seeing the Lord's providence in Boaz. And God is working through Boaz. God is working through Ruth. And they realize this man is a relative. And look at verse 22. It is good, my daughter, that you go out with his maid so that others do not fall upon you in another field. Now that gets us to chapter 3. So it's changed quite a bit. Now you're starting to see the door of opportunity, the window of hope, and now the Redeemer. Her Redeemer is revealed. And so we come to chapter 3, if you'll notice it with me. Look at verse 1. Then Naomi, her mother-in-law, said to her, my daughter, shall I not seek security for you that it may be well with you? So she, can you imagine? She's thinking about what this means. And what now we're talking about what could happen in the future. before in her mind there was no future. I mean, why even come home with me? Go back. Now there's a future. You see, that's what the Lord does, though. The Lord can change a scenario that looks like there's no future into hope. Verse 2. Now is not Boaz our kinsman with whose maids you were? Behold, he winnows barley at the threshing floor tonight. Wash yourself, therefore, and anoint yourself, and put on your best clothes, and go down to the threshing floor, but do not make yourself known to the man until he has finished eating and drinking. And it shall be when he lies down that you shall notice the place where he lies, and you shall go and uncover his feet and lie down, and then he will tell you what you shall do. And she said to her, all that you say I will do. So she went down to the threshing floor and did according to all that her mother-in-law had commanded her. And when Boaz had eaten and drunk and his heart was merry, and he went to lie down at the end of the heap of grain, that she came secretly and uncovered his feet and lay down. And it happened in the middle of the night that the man was startled and bent forward, and behold, a woman was lying at his feet. And he said, who are you? And she said, I am Ruth, your maid. Now listen to this language, which is very similar to language from the prophets, to the language of Ezekiel about God's care and fellowship and provision and blessing for his people. So spread your covering over your maid, for you are a close relative. And then he said, may you be blessed of the Lord, my daughter. You have shown your last kindness to be greater than the first by not going after young men, whether poor or rich. You know, it's interesting. She had been so humble toward him, but this is not an egotistical man. He knows how old he is. He knows his situation. And he sees in her integrity, and he sees in her love and character. Now, my daughter, do not fear. I will do for you whatever you ask, for all people in the city know that you are a woman of excellence. Now, it is true I'm a close relative. However, there's a relative closer than I. Now, let's talk about him for just a minute right here. You know, it says something about his commitment to truth. He obviously has this care and concern for her, and she has shown this for him, and he seems just a little bit surprised by her care and concern for him, but he knows what the law says. I mean, he knows what he is to do, and he says, you know, there is someone closer. And I just wonder if Ruth's countenance fell. The Bible doesn't say that, but you wonder at that point there could be someone before him in line with Ruth. And of course, he follows through all the things that are expected at the beginning of chapter 4 and goes to the man, and he's very careful in how he goes to the man. He's very wise in that. And when he gets done, you know, as they exchange and they tell the story without reading all the details in chapter 4, this man doesn't want that kind of commitment with her. He doesn't have that kind of desire for that scenario and that situation. He says, no, that's not what we're going to do. We will read just a little bit. Look at verse 5 of chapter 4. Then Boaz said, on that day you buy the field from the hand of Naomi, you must also acquire Ruth the Moabitess. You know, it's funny, he doesn't leave the Moabitess part out, does he? He says, you're going to have Ruth the Moabitess, the widow of the deceased, in order to raise up the name of the deceased on his inheritance. And the closest relative said, I cannot redeem it for myself. All at once, he's not interested, because I would jeopardize my own inheritance. Redeem it for yourself, that you may have the right of redemption, for I cannot redeem it. And of course, you can continue to read in that context, and that means now that God's provision is seen even again. When you look at what Naomi was doing, there are some, and I think this is just, it's amazing to me, but some have tried to argue that what she did was somehow promiscuous. You know, it was somehow ungodly. There's nothing about Ruth in this story that's ungodly. She did not do anything that was wrong. To take a beautiful scene of purity and to do that with it is repulsive. Now remember, God is using Ruth. And God is using Boaz to illustrate in these vivid terms His faithfulness. And it's as if Naomi is preparing her for the notion of marriage. Some have suggested that the significance of this is that she's going to stop being a widow. And there may be something to that. To frame her appearance in the best possible way. Boaz loved and honored Ruth, but he was loved and honored by Ruth. Now, that gets us to chapter 4. And we see this healing restoration. What starts out broken, what starts out tragic, ends in restoration. And so we come to chapter 4. And look at verses 13 and 14. So Boaz took Ruth. She became his wife. And he went into her, and the Lord enabled her to conceive, and she gave birth to a son. Then the women said to Naomi, "Blessed is the Lord who has not left you without a redeemer today. May his name become famous in Israel." Who's the real restorer? Who's the real provider? Who's the real sustainer here? God. And he's worked through this circumstance. Listen, blessed is the Lord who has not left you without a redeemer. And we have a redeemer, and the Lord hasn't left us without a redeemer either. Look at verse 15. "May he also be to you a restorer of life and a sustainer of your old age. For your daughter-in-law who loves you and is better to you than seven sons has given birth to him." And all the women in the congregation said, "I told you women were better than men." No. What is she saying? What looked like this great vulnerability? I didn't have any sons. Just had this daughter-in-law. Daughter-in-law was a godly woman who God used for his glory. Do you ever feel like, oh, there's somebody else that needs to do this? Somebody else can be more effective than me. Well, perhaps, but are you doing what you can do? Remember Moses who said, this job's for somebody else. And no, it wasn't. I want us to get this right now. And I know you're thinking, "Well, Bruce, you've said it over and over." Okay. But I want us to get this. God's faithfulness toward Naomi, who's a representative of Israel, of God's people, through Ruth, who was a Gentile. Okay, let's really slow down and think about that. So God's faithfulness was realized toward Naomi or Israel through Ruth or a Gentile, and thus Ruth, who would have been thought of as an outsider, as outside of the community, became the ultimate woman of God's blessing to such a point that she is in the Messianic lineage. Matthew 1, 5, look at chapter 4, verse 16. "Then Naomi," what a beautiful scene. "Then Naomi took the child and laid him in her lap and became his nurse. And the neighbor women gave him a name, saying, 'A son has been born to Naomi.'" So listen, "So they named him Obed, and he is the father of Jesse, the father of David." And we all know the Messiah comes through the lineage of David. Now, what's the story within the story? Just briefly, which means nothing to me, but I like to say it. Briefly. Okay. You know, you remember if you've read Philippians, that, what was it, two more chapters after Paul said finally? So, finally, here we go. Now, I'll do my best. I want us to think just, this is what I want you to take home with you. I mean, this is the thing that needs to shape us here, transform us. First of all, when I see this story, I see the Lord's covenant faithfulness. The Lord's covenant faithfulness. There's a Hebrew word that sometimes is rendered as loving kindness, or we have that song we sing, faithful love. It's very rooted in this notion, hesed. And in Ruth, we see it both on the human and divine level, but what's involved in that is that God's true to His promise. God is faithful and loyal. Even when we, like Naomi, think maybe His hand is turned against us, God is faithful. His redemption and His restoration. And the most visible expression of that was in Jesus, our Redeemer. But we see it in this great story. And to miss that truth is to miss the book of Ruth. The kinsman Redeemer acted on behalf of Ruth in order to offer her redemption and hope. And isn't that what God has done for us in Christ? That's powerful, I think, to see God's loving kindness. Now, here's something else. Redemptive restoration through God's people. Where can Naomi go where she can enjoy God's blessings again? She has to go to God's people. She goes back to God's people. That's where she finds refuge, redemption, restoration. Let me mention just two things real quick. If our notion of being a Christian is an isolation from other Christians, that's not what it means to be a Christian. If we hadn't learned anything else, we ought to have learned that. Yes, there's a very personal aspect of my faith, but there's a sense in which I have to be part of that community. That passage that we hear so often, not forsaking the assembling of ourselves together as the manner of some is. Listen, but exhorting one another. There's healing in that. Brother Wilson Adams has written a great piece, and I want to share it with you. You may have seen it. It's called The People in the Pew. But I want you to think about it in light of what we've talked about. Let me share it with you. The People in the Pew. He says they are parents burdened because of their prodigal children. They are grandparents raising grandchildren because if they don't, they are caregivers wondering if anyone understands. They are single parents facing double duty. They are brethren struggling with sin and failing again and yet repenting. They are smiling faces hoping to hide their depression. They are a childless couple facing disappointment again. They are folks facing both cancer and fears. They are parents who have had to do the unthinkable and bury a child. They are parents struggling to raise a special needs child. They are brothers and sisters who have done everything they know to keep their marriage going. They are widows who sit down as one at a table for two. They are sisters who harbor the secret of being an abused wife. They are step-parents who seem to be on the outside looking in. They are the lonely, the scared, the hurting, but they come. They come to the table to share their grief with the one who gave His all. They come to lift up their voice in song while brushing away a tear. They come to pray and connect with their only hope. They come to encourage someone else while hoping someone will encourage them. They come to hear the good news and hope to take away something that will heal their hurt. These are the people in the pew. Funny. They look a lot like you and me. And for His sake we come. We must be determined to serve as a Ruth to our Naomi, to serve as a Boaz to our Ruth and to give our heart to God. And then our final point, and that's this: the Lord's covenant faithfulness, redemptive restoration through God's people, and what's often called divine reversal or transformation. Let me explain this. If you will see, when you read your Bible, you'll see it all the way through the Bible. All the way through. Ruth is a wonderful example. Divine reversal. Outsiders become insiders. Some insiders become outsiders. You know, Achan, by the way, was an insider that became an outsider. Ruth was an outsider that became an insider. Look at the story of Joseph. That's divine reversal. You see what seems like tragedy and God's providence brings him on the other end. Look at Job. He starts out in one place. He goes through all this travail and difficulty. And then God blesses him at the end. Divine reversal. Ladies and gentlemen, Jesus Christ and his story of salvation is all about divine reversal. What men hold up, God does not. The Son of God did not come in royal clothing and status. He humbled himself. He suffered and he died. What does the Lord say to us? The humble shall be exalted, and those who exalt themselves shall be humbled. That's divine reversal. That's the gospel of Christ. That's the story of salvation. And here is Ruth and Naomi when it looks so hopeless. And yet God transforms this situation. God can transform emptiness into fullness and mourning into joy, and death into life, and despair into hope, and brokenness into restoration, and alienation into fellowship, pain into healing, and lostness into redemption, and anxiety into peace. He can do abundantly above all that we ask or think. So, at the end of this story, it's very simple. The Lord never fails. Thank you for your good attention tonight. If you're not a Christian, he's calling you from despair and sin and lostness to him. Will you come? Will you let the Lord, by his sacrifice, redeem you from your sin? Come now, together we stand and we sing.